What's up and welcome to Sweathead with Mark Pollard. Today as I walk around Central Park, there's a bit of rain coming down. I'm going to talk about mood. Whoa, so much mood. I'm going to talk about the Sweathead summer camp coming up, and then I'm going to answer about 8 questions, including staying motivated, giving creatives difficult feedback, and so on. From a mood point of view, look, it's rough out there, and a lot of people listening to this, you might, you know, be a little bit isolated, a bit burnt out, even though in much of the world it's summer right now, and you're probably feeling conflict about this. Like, it's summer, I'm supposed to be having fun, and yet everything's so expensive, and, you know, I'm hearing all this stuff about job loss and inflation and experiencing those things, and what do? I've been waiting for 2 years to not feel like all of this, and I keep feeling like all of this. So, look, you're not alone. You're not alone. And I do get nervous from a strategy crew that you might pay more of a price than some people. Okay, so I know it's a privileged job, so I'm not talking about that in particular, just from an emotional and a mental point of view. So much of your time and energy goes into trying to understand the world, like you can't really turn it off. You can't be a strategist and like not look at the internet or not look at the news or not read a book or not interview people. So you've probably got all these voices and all this information running through your head. You're probably on pitches through summer. I guarantee a bunch of you are going to be doing pitches right now where the client gives you the pitch and then disappears for 2 or 3 weeks. Or they put you on those pitch calls with other agencies and punish you if you ask a good question, because if you've emailed that question ahead of time, you have to share that question and the answer with everybody else. So ridiculous, that behavior. I don't get it. But look, please, please, please. The next couple of years, I think, are going to be difficult from what I'm understanding. Sorry to be simplistic with that sort of thing. And in the US, which is going to affect everywhere else, the politicians are going to be coming for our minds through algorithms. You know, you see all this crazy stuff going on right now, and especially in the past 5 or 6 years, the US has managed to break reality from itself. And almost, you know, there's a group of people who don't feel they need to be accountable to anybody, really. And I think the vitriol, the name-calling, the labeling, the anger on all sides. You know, I just wish they went sides, but on all sides of all the topics, I don't think it's going to die down very easily. And I did hear about there being a bit of a warning with the US security services saying that there's going to be more internal strife. And through this, I just hope that you can stay connected to people you love and care about, and try to find a way to do meaningful work through it. Just a brief, digressive segue here, but just a brief Sweathead update. We're launching a 4-week strategy summer camp on July 21. Details are at www.sweathead.com. We have 8 speakers and 2 wonderful co-hosts. The sub theme, well, the theme of it is the word awakening. We're going to build 4 weeks of training around words. The first week is loving words. And in that week, you're going to hear from Raka Taylor, who I interviewed on this podcast. He runs under the agency name Angles and is also a rapper from a beautiful group called Dilated Peoples. Raka, if you're listening to this, congrats on having, I think it's your first show in, what, 3 years? First live show in 3 years. We spoke the other day. And I think before the pandemic, hope you don't mind me saying this, you were planning to have like a 2-year anniversary celebration around the world, because you guys have been around for a while. And that didn't happen. And so as a performer, woof, that must have been tough. Must have been tough. But honored to have you involved. I was trying to find people from MIT who study the brain and words, but couldn't quite get anybody to commit. I had a few emails. So on that first session, you're going to get me. I'll be talking about words, and Raka and I will be talking about wordplay and how it can be beneficial to strategists. In the second week, we're going to be talking about finding words, and we have Lindsay Waking from Nonfiction Research and Nicole Drzezinski, who was recently at Reddit. Lindsay is known for doing like really deep and interesting research in a way where she just doesn't accept the obvious, and she'll go into dark and meaningful places. Nicole, having been at Reddit, and not just because of this, but Nicole's really good at interesting desk research and enjoying the eccentric, quirky things that we can find online. So that's going to be a great session. In the third week, we have Marcus Collins, Chief Strategy Officer or Head of Strategy at Wieden & Kennedy in New York, and Claire Strickett, who was recently a strategy director at Adam and Eve DDB, one of the world's best agencies. And they'll be talking about writing strategy. They'll be sharing different frameworks, different writing techniques. Claire's also a published author. Marcus, I actually met Marcus. I'm pretty sure we sat down. Were you a translation, Marcus? Oh, it was just before you left New York, maybe 11 years ago, just after I arrived. 10 or 11 years ago, before you moved back west, and now you're back east, I believe. And since then, Marcus has become pretty well known and celebrated in the marketing world. He's become a doctor, and really looking forward to that session. And then the fourth session is with Richard Huntington, who's CSO of Saatchi & Saatchi in London. I gotta say, last time we caught up, Richard, the following day, I think you were made chairman of Saatchi & Saatchi, so who knows what's gonna happen after this session. Who knows? And also Marcello Ferrarini. Most of these people I've interviewed on the Sweated Podcast. If you want to hear them talk, go to Google. Podcast Delivery or Discovery. Podcast Discovery is still really not good. Marcello is at Lego, and he's going to talk to us about presentations from the client's point of view. I think it's a really strong lineup. The lessons will go for about 30 minutes each, and they'll be co-hosted by Thalophilus Wells IV, who, congratulations, just got an internship at Dentsu, and also Gunnel Sedigova, who's a strategist in Canada now at an agency called Performance Art. It's all part of the annual membership. It's $195, the membership. It's going to get you access to that, as well as the fundamentals videos that I've got online. Later in the year, we're doing the Do Together conference in October. We'll launch another accelerator in October. It'll be a multi-week extravaganza, 4 to 6 weeks. We'll be relaunching the memberships and really sort of trying to muscle up on what we're doing. Get a team of about 7 or 8 people. It's on my mind, because actually having our mid-year catch-up. It's the first time we've done a mid-year catch-up, but we're catching up about all of this tomorrow. I have no idea if people are interested about this. I love building businesses, and I love trying to do it in a foreign country, and that's what I'm doing. Maybe one day I'll talk about it or try to write something useful about it, but just fortunate enough to have a really good crew of people. And the main goal in the short term is to build this business in a way that it can exist almost without me, right? Because that's the way it gets to live. Lots of other stuff happening there. Stay tuned. All right. So I've got 8 questions from people, and hopefully the rain won't mess with my keyboard. I started to record earlier, and then the rain pressed the dictation button, wrote over a bunch of the questions, and then somehow, as I tried to fix it all, it stopped recording. So here I am. First question: how do we as planners stay motivated when working on a brand we don't really believe in? It's a big one. Motivation in spite of the brand. I will probably quote or cite or point to Viktor Frankl in any conversation about meaning/purpose. He wrote a book, Man's Search for Meaning, after he spent some time, it was a few years in at least one, I think it was 2 or 3 maybe, concentration camps during World War II. He was a psychologist going in and developed this theory that he popularized afterwards. I think it was called the Logosphere. Anyway, the thing that I really took from his writing is meaning is really important. Okay, first of all, meaning is really important. It motivates us, it animates us, it gets us from one day to the other. And that's especially true if you're in a society or in a way of life that you don't always have to think about survival once you get beyond that survival mode. The thing is that meaning doesn't have to be noble in a big way. So if you're working on a project for a brand you don't like, first of all, there's a difference between a brand being destructive in the world and you having to work on it. That's one thing. The second is a brand that you just find boring, or you don't find the clients very ambitious, or you've been working on it for too long. In those situations, you're going to have to manufacture your meaning. And that could be to focus on something you want to get good at, to focus on the process. Maybe you want to present in a strange, eccentric way for the first time. Maybe you want to do a presentation that doesn't involve slides. Whoa! Wouldn't that be amazing? Maybe you want to spend an hour talking about the problem, even though the client avoids problems, right? So that's one way to do it. The second is to think about the audience that you're going to be advertising to, and to see if you can convince yourself that you're putting something positive into their world. Bring that image to mind. You know, what I'm not encouraging you to do, which would be the critique of what I said, what I'm not imagining you to do is, or what I'm not asking you to do is imagine that you're doing noble work, and for that lunge for nobility and meaning to mean you start doing things that are not going to be beneficial to the brand. An example of that could be you've got to sell soap. Maybe you just need to launch a thing that says, we've got new soap and it smells great. And you're out there saying, no, soap could help change North and South Korea and bring them back together. No, that's not what I'm talking about, okay? But you're going to need to manufacture your meaning. It doesn't have to be noble. It could be about putting food on the table for your family. It could be about practicing something. It could be about finding a way to believe you're helping your individual client or the few clients you're working with, or somehow contributing to the world through their audience, their customer. The next one is from PVT Moz, how to deal with a strategy job where the thinking is shallow, assumption heavy, and channel focused. Yeah, I mean, I feel like this is the majority of what I tend to see, you know, a lot of presentations with a whole bunch of numbers and then output of some brainstorm with no idea, no through line, no reason to be. I feel like that's the majority of work out there. And I know I have to say this, right? It might not be. If you're in the epicenter of incredible creativity and great account planning, what I'm saying might be completely foreign, but you're probably 5 to 10% of the world. And the rest, everyone's running around, often working for people who've never done this work, who are somehow in these positions where they have strategists or even creative leaders or creative directors, creative people reporting to them. So how do you deal with a strategy job where the thinking is shallow, assumption heavy, and channel focused? I think you gotta start. I was buying my time to find an answer. You gotta start with, like, is it working or not working? It's a bit like when every now and then someone say, I write creative briefs and no one wants to pay attention to them. Well, are they any good? Do you pay attention to other people? Or is it all about you? So if you want to pull apart assumptions as it starts to pour down in Central Park again. I hope you get to hear it. It could be relaxing. The first assumption there is that what you want, where you're working, could benefit from. And part of that's about asking, what's the game that we're playing here? Who's successful here? What are clients actually buying? Because, you know, if you've got a company that is doing well, and they never question strategy, they never question the client's brief, and they're just banging out videos or social media posts, but they're doing well, then you've got to ask yourself, who am I to actually question that? The second thing is you've got to work out your case for it, for doing it. And so I think Tom Roach has done a great job, formerly at BBH, now at Jellyfish. Tom Roach has done a great job of rounding up a lot of the research on building brands. So you can Google Tom Roach and Jellyfish, is it with two J's? It could be. And BBH, Google those four things together and see if you can find him in his articles. And then really it's about trying to develop your own way of working, which would need to involve some kind of research, maybe stakeholder interviews to push assumptions around, and then committing to a form of philosophy, strategy philosophy. I don't want to lose you with that word. I don't mean it in a highfalutin way. Personally, I believe that strategy exists to solve problems, for example. So I focus a lot of the work that I do, a lot of the way I work around that. And I believe it's an empathetic, creative craft. So again, that leads to a lot of behaviors and a complete set of a whole way of working. It's a cheeky question, that one. Maybe you're just frustrated in asking it. I hope there was something useful there, though. You really got to answer the question, is this working? Is this what we all want? Is this what clients want? And if it is what clients want, then maybe you got to find a different company to work at. Vil Herbery asks, how do you sell strategy and insights to creatives without them feeling I'm on their turf? So how do you sell strategy and insights to creatives without them feeling you're on their turf? Well, again, you've got to have a clear philosophy for the role of creativity and the role of strategy in that company. And it starts there. If you don't have it, it's just going to be a mess. It'll be a battle of egos and maybe a battle of the extroverts, the most dominant people, the most talkative people. So you need to understand what you're all there to achieve. And within that, you also need a way of working. But maybe it's a way of working you can express on a page. We're not talking about 50 slides, when this happens, that happens, when this happens, that happens. Just a way of working. How do we know when we're doing the work that we want to do or need to do? And then the third bit of this is you need to calibrate to the teams that you're working with. Now, a lot of them might not be conceptually trained and they might not be strategically trained. So they might struggle to have concepts or advertising ideas, depending on what kind of agency you're working in, campaign ideas. But they also might struggle with the word insight. They might struggle with a brief. It depends on where they're at with everything. Maybe what you're doing is not great. So again, got to challenge your own assumptions there that what you're putting in front of people is useful. The next thing I think is useful, or the next useful thing to do, is to try to share your thinking early and without it being super formal. Now, if you're working in a formal place, I think it's going to make being creative or being strategic difficult anyway. But if you're in a place where you can casually talk to people, maybe you share three things you found in research. Hey, what do you think about this? Now, if, for example, you believe that strategy solves problems, you might ask or share with the creative team three problems that I think we need to solve, or three insights. You know, you don't need to finish all of your own sentences. And what I mean by that is you might share a problem, you might share an insight and go, hey, what's working for you? And someone might go, oh, that reminds me of this time where, you know, I was babysitting, blah, 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 and this happened and this happened. And they might give you words that you could find useful and usable. So I think they're the steps that I would go through if I were you, at the very least. Hari Bhaktkar asks, if strategists should know all about how other departments work, am I an all-rounder? Sort of. Don't know what you're trying to cure there, though. I think it's really helpful for strategists to understand how all parts of the business work, as I think anybody in advertising would benefit from knowing how all parts of the business work. You know, if you can talk about money, if you can talk about scopes, if you can remember that, hey, maybe that contract needs to be signed while not being the person who's necessarily going to get it signed. If you can think, hey, you know, usually timelines, that piece of work might take us 4 weeks and we usually charge this. And by the way, the creative team we're working with this time, they're a little bit different to the last creative team we worked with, so we're going to need to change how we interact. That's great. I don't know if that's really being an all-rounder. You know, and then it's like, well, why do you need to feel like you're being an all-rounder if I said yes? Does that make you feel good or not good? I do think there are groups of strategists who get nervous about how subjective the work can be, okay, even though we want it to be evidence-based, we want it to use objectivity, but there can be a lot of looseness where maybe on one project our role is really just to run that workshop, another is to really write the crap out of that creative brief, on another maybe it's just research. You know, I think we do have to adapt to situations in ways that can make us question our own sense of self, our own heroism. Now, throw into that, if you do strategy work and creative work and you're a bit bouncy in the brain anyway, and you don't have an overly structured life, or you grew up around a situation or situations that weren't very structured, you're going to feel these things even more, possibly. Let alone, you might be prone to rumination, overthinking. I mean rumination. Overthinking, I think we can say super easily. I mean rumination. And spiral into negative thoughts. So, yeah, the question back to you is, do you need to be an all-rounder? Would that make you feel good? Or are you saying that because you think that society and maybe our industry has talked down about all-rounders and strategists for a while, which I have seen. So I would understand if that was the trigger for the question. Brad Sneakerhead asks, how to get bottom-line focused companies to value strategy work beyond ROI projections? Look, I don't even think this is controversial. I think there's a group of people who have a certain cluster of personality traits, probably low in agreeableness, probably quite conscientious, more stable personalities, so low in neuroticism, maybe relatively intelligent, who've done well in life, but who are not very empathetic and not very creative. It's always hard to sell strategy into them. There has to be a crisis or someone has to come in and take over for them. Now, I think that cluster of traits I mentioned there, I don't mean to be negative or trivial. I do think that that cluster of traits is probably very represented, maybe overrepresented in the world and in business.
It ain't safe.
Add in the ego that it takes to start a company, and maybe if you're working with companies that are newish and are young, not a lot of maturity, and all of a sudden the strategist can feel aggressively sidelined and like they got to talk numbers all the time, while deep down, knowing that numbers matter, evidence matters, but also to do any of this work effectively, there has to be some kind of leap. And maybe you cannot research the hell out of that leap. So, I don't know, how do you get bottom line focused companies to value strategy work? It's usually through crisis, it's because their paid advertising isn't working, or I used to hear this a few years ago, I don't know if this is still the case, you know, like the cookies, the programmatic cookies got too expensive and they're like, oh, now we need to do brand, don't we? Or if you've got some research that shows that their brand's weak and that potentially you can make the case that because the brand's weak, they're spending more on acquiring each customer. But I do think there's something of psychology and culture at play when we're engaging with these groups of people that it makes it even harder. And I think a lot of strategists can struggle with that because we believe we're supposed to understand people. So we're like, okay, we can understand our way through this problem with these people. And it's hard. Like you, as you get older and you start to, especially in New York, you start to meet a lot of the people that, you know, the tops of companies and also account, you know, people who run finance and accounting and various other things. You can see more obviously the clusters of personality traits that help someone be successful and therefore in charge of the decision that might help you do different kind of work. Anon asks this, it's a bit of a riddle this one, question, kill my inner planner. I left the agency world but still feel angst, my work isn't good enough. So it depends if you mean that you feel angst that your current work isn't good enough and that you're currently doing strategy work. Or, you know, maybe you've become a doctor and your doctoring's not good, I don't know. But I'm going to assume that you've moved out of the agency world, maybe client side. It's always funny when we say client side, brand side, business side. And you're still not sure if your work's good enough. It's hard, it's hard, it's hard, it's hard. I do believe in the concept of neuroplasticity. It's scientific. We can rewire our minds significantly. It takes work, and it's probably a combination for you of meditation and affirmations over time. When I was younger, I would have been like, what? But I think that's true. Journaling, listening to yourself. You know, I have mini panics relatively often. Don't worry, you're safe. It's a safe space here. Not going dark. And I start to say little things back to myself. I say things like, you know, you got this. Or maybe I try to make myself impressed with what's going on. You know, like, far out. For me, you know, fortunate enough to move countries and have a family and feeding a family sometimes through my silly baby strategy drawings. Like, dude, that's pretty cool, isn't it? You know, so I try to have conversations with myself like that. I actually said that out loud next to people and they looked at me like I was crazy. I'm like, yeah, a version of crazy. You know, hopefully you can be around people who support you. If you have gone into an environment where you feel you're being undermined or that your boss is stealing your work or talking over you all the time, that's going to create complexity for you. And also if you grew up in an environment where the only way you got attention was by doing well, there's some things you're going to need to deal with over the coming years, okay? But you don't need to kill your inner planner. I love the inner planner. The inner planner is someone who is hopefully a critical thinking, someone who's unafraid of truth and honesty, someone who likes connecting dots, creating new meaning in the world, who can hold space for people. So you don't want to kill that inner planner. What you might need to do is, if you've got this angst, is work out how to take different kinds of action. You know, so while I talked about having a bit of self-talk these days that I can access better than I used to, sometimes I'm like, okay, you got to go for a walk now. And I've managed to talk myself into doing that. Or maybe I'm like, you got to put something in Instagram now, or you got to record yourself doing a podcast now. And it just gets me out of a bit of a funk. And I believe that concept is known as biofeedback, where sometimes if we're feeling anxious or stuck, you need to move, and that then in that movement, the thing you need more of happens more. And on, wow, lots of anon today. Any tips on how to deliver tough love creative feedback? This one's hard because it depends on the relationship you've established with the person. You know, tough love's, I find, is a little bit of a patronizing word. It did get used towards me when I was a kid, tough love, which meant you're just by yourself all the time. Honestly, that's like, tough love. It's like, really? Okay, cut the apron cord, I heard quite a lot of. I'm like, yeah, but the house is empty all the time. Now it's just me by myself. That's from a super young age. And so, not criticizing, not complaining, oh my gosh. But like, tough love I find a little bit problematic because of the way I've heard it over the years. You know, can't love be love? What if you're working with a creative team and you want them to succeed? Can't you connect with a sense of compassion for them and a desire to want them to do well? I know the person who asked me this, and I know they're very capable of that. Now, if the problem's with someone more senior than you, which might be difficult for the person who asked this because they are the most senior, then that's different. If you're dealing with a sociopath or a narcissist, that's different. Okay, but in general, if we're working in a company, as I believe you are, that has a pretty good sense of itself, pretty good sense of where it's going, good momentum, which you do, and you're working with people who are not toxic, then surely the question back to you is, can't you operate from a place of love when you're giving feedback? That's where I would start. The second is, I'm not a big fan of the word feedback. I'm not even a big fan of feedback. And you know, a lot of you know my friend Julian Cole, did a whole bunch of events together, and he would always want to send out the survey for feedback. I'm like, how do they call it feedback? I don't want feedback. I just poured out my heart and soul for 6 or 7 hours with you. Like, I don't need feedback about that. That's me reconciling over a decade, 2 decades of my life. I don't need feedback about that, you know. I do like other words, like the yoga word adjustment. And by the way, I've not done yoga in so long. I think I've done it once since the pandemic. I really miss it. And also notes in the production world. They say, you know, I've got some notes. So just pushing on the word feedback there a little bit. And then the final thing that I would do if I was in a role where I was stewarding a team, coaching a team, what I like to do is I like to try to get everybody's creative / strategic / project ambitions out of their mouths at the start of a project. And I like to put them up on the wall. And part of that's just so I can understand what they're motivated to do, and potentially so I can try to connect them to that if their motivation wanes on a project. So for example, if someone says, I want to come up with a website design that I'd use in my portfolio, and we're looking at their work, and at least not something that seems like it would belong in their portfolio, you could say something, you know, like, could you see this in your portfolio? Or, you know, I was just thinking about the challenge you set for yourself, the ambition you set for yourself. How do you think you're going with that? Every now and then when I've done things like that, the person's like, yeah, you're right. And it's not tricky. It's not tricky. I just believe that for the most part, if we are too head on, and Australians and Dutch, we can be direct, but if we're too head on without a good caring relationship, and maybe there's some ratio, right? 7 good things to 1 negative thing, or 6 to 1. Without that, at the very least, but also without asking questions and trying to understand the situation, like, why are we here? What happened? Then the other person's probably going to reject you. Narcissism and creativity correlate. Extroversion as well, a little. Extroversion is one of the big 5 personality traits. Narcissism is not. It's a cluster of a whole lot of stuff. Okay, but ego, narcissism correlates with creativity. Because you have to be slightly self-absorbed, or very self-absorbed, to think, first of all, that you have anything to offer to the world. And I don't mean these words in a bad way, by the way. But you have to be self-oriented to go into your head, to spend that time. And also, direct feedback. If it feels like criticism, and it can be cultural, the person could close down. And if they're powerful, you might find yourself disinvited from a lot of things. So I hope that cluster, a lot of cluster today, but I hope that cluster of thoughts helps, although you're a boss, so I'm sure you've got better answers to your own question. I just appreciate the question. There's a final question here. Sorry if this sounds self-serving. I do get asked this question quite often. I've been following your emails and your Instagram posts. Here's me, just making myself feel good. Halfway around Central Park. Everything has started making sense in the strategy role. Can you please suggest some books to read that might help me expand my horizon in the field of strategy? Also, I wanted to know if I can find your book, Strategy Is Your Words, in India. And that's from Ahana Nawab. So my book's only available from swearhead.com. It's a decision I made. The economics of Amazon don't quite make sense. And rolling the book out through different publishers doesn't make a lot of financial sense. As an author, you don't get a lot of money if you give people your stuff. And I got to tell you, one day I'm thinking about how to publish other people's books and building courses around them and businesses around them. And if I do that, or if we do that, I want it to be done in a way that I've not been able to access. Like, I want to create it in a way that's equitable, that would excite you. I've got plenty of friends who've written books with B2B publishers. They might get a couple of grand as an advance. They hand over all their IP. Often those books are not edited in the way that they could be. There's not a lot of effort put into the design. The books are optimized for search. And a lot of my friends, like, that don't feel like they get promotional marketing support. And, you know, so the point is I played a different game. And so the book's only available through me. It's available in Spanish and Portuguese. And I got to work out how to launch it in those languages because the pandemic threw a lot of stuff into chaos. India is actually one of those countries that I want to work out how to do more stuff in. The economics are totally different, but when I've been there and when I've worked with agencies there, it's always beautiful. I mean, I feel like a lot of the work's always beautiful, but I don't know. India is just such an ancient civilization, or ancient set of civilizations. I'm super curious about it. As far as books that could extend you in strategy, I think reading books about behavioral economics, so like the early ones, everything from Freakonomics to Nudge to Swift, even to Richard Schotten's book, The Choice Factory. Just pick a few behavioral economics books. Neuroscience, The Brain That Changes Itself. That's where I first came across the concept of neuroplasticity in any meaningful way. It's probably 9 or 10 years ago now. I'll go with 9 or 10, maybe more actually. You could look at game theory. There's some interesting books on strategy. Lords of Strategy is a book about the history of management consultancies. Super interesting. They were marketers, all right? They knew how to create diagrams and frameworks and sell them. They would sit on these things for a decade or so and just milk them and make all the other business people feel a bit insecure and then work out how to sell them. And then they've got that whole, like, up and out way of working where they fire a lot of their people and then those people become clients. So lots of frameworks mixed in with multi-level marketing. I'm joking. So much more than that. I'm so joking. I think. Read books on writing. On Writing by Stephen King. On Writing Well by William Zisner. The Artful Edit by Susan Bell. Read books on creativity. The Artist's Way, I think, is good. First time I came across this, it was in my 20s. I was too young for it. I'd also encourage you to get into people like Carl Jung. And there's a few good YouTube channels. There's one called The Academy of Ideas. I think that's what it's called. And they summarize a lot of pretty amazing philosophical thought. Definitely keep a hand on fiction. You know, I think any good fiction is riddled with psychological insight. So don't be too good for fiction. Don't be too good for writing simply. All right, I'm going to end there. Also, I don't know if you heard that music, but a lot of music just drove by. Also want to give a big shout out to Alex Morris, who's a strategist. He released the Strategy Scrapbook a few years ago. You can find him at alexmorris.co. He's currently working at Sid Lee. He shared with us some monsters that you'll see for the Sweathead Strategy Summer Camp. All right, I hope you're doing well. I'll see you next time. We'll probably go down to one episode a week for the next few weeks. I might throw in a few extras. But I hope you're doing okay out there. Peace. Thank you for listening to this episode of Sweathead. If it's your first time here, please subscribe. If you enjoyed the episode, please share it with a friend or leave a kind rating. For more information about our strategy classes, events, and books, visit www.sweathead.com. And yes, you can find us on Instagram at Sweathead.